it is a revolution, but it's really about people saying that they're changing the way they want to live. And they're changing the way they want to spend their time. They're changing the way they want to consume products. And they're changing the way they want to filter their choices. No longer are those filters just the things that are habits they inherited from the last generation in the homes they grew up in.
You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
So on Hooked on Startups today, I am delighted beyond words to have Tina Sharkey with me. Tina, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I can't tell you how excited I am to be here and what a fan I am of what you're doing and the areas that you are diving into in our industry and the awesome people that you have. It's such a privilege to be included in that community.
Thank you very much. And see, the major challenge for me right now is to sort of get across in less than an hour, you know, all the amazing things that you've done. So, I mean, right now you're the founder or the co-founder and chief executive of Brandless, which is this fantastic idea. But just in case people don't know, you're an entrepreneur, you're an advisor, you're an investor. There are pages and pages of stuff about you on Wikipedia. You're involved with HDTV at its very beginning. You registered the name socialmedia.com before it was even invented. I think you were voted the most influential woman in technology. It's just kind of like touching the surface of what you've done in the past. So your knowledge and insight into consumerism and what makes people tick, what makes the people think, how they interact with e-commerce is seismic in proportion. So I just wanted to sort of put that in perspective when we begin talking about Brandless.
Fantastic. I don't know exactly who you were talking about, but I guess
this is the right Tina Sharkey.
Yeah, it is the right. Yes, it is the right Tina Sharkey. So those things all sound vaguely familiar, and I would say most importantly, I'm sort of a cultural anthropologist. You know, I'm a passionate study of people and habits and how that fits into the changing way in people interact with each other through social, with products and services, with companies, in culture, in communities, whether it's at home, whether it's at work. Just love to study people and behavior, and technology has enabled so much of that, as has, you know, the products and services and the communities that, you know, I've had the privilege to be associated with.
But I think I think one thing that technology has done most recently through social media is give us a window into people's souls, has given us much more of an insight into what people think really. And is that what led you to Brandless? Because to quote your phrase, you know, the system is broken. So what is the magic of Brandless? What is the essence of what Brandless is about?
I had to really distill it down to the true essence of Brandless. It's three words. It's the democratization of goodness. This idea that everyone deserves better and better shouldn't cost more. That waking up in the morning and having to choose between what you can afford versus what the qualities and things that you want for yourself and for your family shouldn't have to be a choice. And that along the way, we can all just be better humans, to the point that you just said about social. If we're looking into everybody's soul, we start with the premise that everyone is awesome, that we love the phrase awesome strangers, because it actually captures this idea that we assume best intentions with everybody that we meet and with those people we have yet to meet along our journey. And if we actually look at them, make a connection to them, even if we don't know them, we can actually potentially unlock a smile, extend a hand, practice tangible acts of kindness. And sometimes that may be organic better for you non-GMO food. And sometimes that may be doing community service together or having a shared experience or sharing a story or sharing a narrative, or more importantly, finding ways to turn all of the cameras around to tell their stories. So the essence of Brandless, when we talk about democratizing goodness, is really about people, putting people first and assuming best intentions and trying to do whatever we can to make every day easier for everyone.
And I think, has this always been there in the background, or has it been this natural progression from when brands first came out? Has there been a tipping point where people are beginning to say, no more, I don't want this, I don't want the current status quo, I want something different?
I think that it hasn't always been. And I think that's because, I mean, when you think about revolutions in communication, revolutions in brands, let's go back to that moment, you know, sort of post-Mad Men, but pre-platform, when Steve Jobs announced to the world, using the 1984 metaphor, that the Macintosh had arrived, and he stood on the top of the mountaintop, and it's the most famous commercial ever made. And he said, it's a revolution. And he only had to say it once, that everybody tuned in, and that was it. And he was able to sort of, you know, Moses-like at the top of the hills with the tablets, deliver that message and say, from this day forward, everything will be different. And then Apple proceeded to tell us for the next two decades to think differently. And that inspired us to have the tools that enabled that, but it was still a one-to-many communication. Yeah. Whether it was a billboard, whether it was a broadcast television commercial, whether it was, you know, the messages that they were able to deliver. But then when Steve got on the stage, I don't know what, it's not even 10 years ago now, and he held up the iPhone and he said, we've done the most remarkable thing. We've actually turned a camera, a music player, and a phone into one integrated object.
Yeah.
What he didn't realize was that that moment that he was helping the world hail a taxi and turn the cameras on to ourselves. And at that moment, the democratization of access, the democratization of story, and the democratization of narrative became an entirely new era of storytelling, where no longer could brands stand at the top of the mountaintops and tell you their stories and hire the actors or filmmakers or animators to do so, because no longer was it what a brand says about itself.
Yeah.
It's really what a friend tells a friend. Because at that same moment, that was also the era that ushered in social platforms, social media, news feeds, peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
And so all of the storytelling platforms, be it Facebook or MySpace before it, be it Instagram, all of those platforms were what friends were telling friends, Twitter, etc. And so all of that became enabled and no longer, and now it's billions of networks of one. And,
yes.
And then the people in your network. And so that then changed this idea that Mad Men, quote unquote, had to create narrative, be it a Jolly Green Giant, who's not really existing. I hate to be the one to break that news to you in case that yes. was that person. Or, you know, the guy, you know, riding on a beach on a white horse at sunset is actually wearing deodorant that's going to keep you dry during the day.
Yeah.
Like that just, that's false narrative. That's drama. And there's totally, like, TV is having a resurgence. There's nothing wrong with narrative and drama, but it doesn't belong on the things I eat, share, and use every day. Those things, I actually want to go all the way back. I want to go back to a time when everything was organic because it came from the land.
Yes.
I want to go back to a time when the general store just had the good stuff. And I actually want to give applesauce back its rights. Who says that Mott's and Del Monte own applesauce? Applesauce owns applesauce. And so does it want to be a toddler snack? I don't know. Why don't you ask it? Like this idea that people should own their own narrative and that products can do the same has been enabled in this era of platforms and social and storytelling that comes from passionate users, creatives, and networks of friends who want to connect, communicate, and share around the stuff that they are discovering, the stuff that they are passionate about, the stuff that they are teaching each other, the stuff they are learning from each other. And the role of the brand has changed dramatically. Is there a role for that brand? I would say yes. It's just changed.
And it's about truth, I think. I think everything that you're saying, it's not it's that the brand was able to bludgeon us into believing that that is the only way forward. You know, as you say, the fact is that you talk in one of your other pieces about the Costco closet, the, you know, buy now, pay later, have everything now, this sort of mass consumerism. If I walk down the aisles of, you know, Walmart or CVS, I see choice of thousands and thousands of things. So at what point is it a revolution? Do people want to turn this on their head, or is it just people saying that they don't want this sort of mass consumerism shoved down their throat anymore?
I think that it is a revolution, but it's really about people saying that they're changing the way they want to live, and they're changing the way they want to spend their time. They're changing the way they want to consume products, and they're changing the way they want to filter their choices. No longer are those filters just the things that are habits they inherited from the last generation in the homes they grew up in. Now they're saying, wait a second, I was raised to understand that healthier choices are better options. I was educated by modern society that organics and non-GMOs are better for me. I have some dietary beliefs or lifestyle beliefs, whether that's vegan or gluten-free, whether that's cruelty-free or ingredient-free. I'm actually an educated consumer. Like Sergey and Larry, when they created Google, they said they wanted to democratize information.
Yeah.
So they were rather successful, I would say, by every measure. So now everybody actually has access to information. So now people want to make different and better choices. The problem is, and this is where truth and trust comes in, is that we are led to believe that those choices cost more. Yeah. And that in order to eat the values and the lifestyle beliefs and the dietary restrictions and the behavioral ways in which you want to live, that there's a premium price for that. And that's not true.
And you talk about the brand tax, and we'll cover that in a second, but I think you're absolutely right, because if you go somewhere like Whole Foods, for example, it is incredibly expensive. So if you want to eat a gluten-free diet or an organic diet, you pay the price for that. And is there a groundswell of anger that we have been misled, that has become where this information has become available to us because of the ubiquity of social media?
I think that it's both anger and access. So I think that for the people for whom they're educated, and they're going to those outlets and they're being forced to pay a premium, they resent it. Even if they can afford it, they resent it, because it's like they're smarter than that. But then there's a broader issue, which is that everybody deserves it and most people can't afford it.
Yeah.
And so then they're forced to choose. And oh, by the way, they're not even invited to that party because those stores are not in food deserts. Those stores are not available to most.
Yeah.
And we can't look at our urban, you know, our urban environments, be it, you know, San Francisco, New York, or any of the major markets, and say that that's how America lives, because that's not how America lives. And oh, by the way, the entry to that party is way more than $3. So what we tried to do is sort of blow the doors off the front of the building and say, we're just going to widen that berth and bring in so many more people, because everyone deserves better. And they know it, but they didn't think that they had a seat at that table. They didn't think they were invited to that party. And we're saying that's not true.
And I think this really goes, because there are some pretty seismic changes generally that are happening in terms of, you know, you talk about the millennials being your sort of the primary agents of change in this. But it seems that people just don't want to be associated with the things that their parents and grandparents were brought up with, whether it's food, shopping, consumerism, politics. So I think one of the...
So you raise a really interesting point there. I beg your pardon. Here.
No. I was going to say, so it just seems, is that something that's been brewing, or is that just a millennial thing, or is that the combination of global factors?
I think that it goes back to what you said earlier, when you said truth and I said trust. And I think we both meant the same thing, which is that you could call an institution a brand, right? You could switch those names, because brands, if you go to the essence of what is a brand is a trust mark. A brand is sort of a symbol, verbal or nonverbal, iconic or visual or gesture that says that filter, seeing that swoosh on that sneaker suggests that that's like a quality athletic shoe, or seeing that mark on that building suggests that that is, you know, underwritten or supported by the federal government, or, you know, and fill in the blank, because institutions are brands, flags are brands, flags are marks, flags are country marks, you know?
Yep.
So I think that what's happened is that because out of the top 100 CPG brands in this country last year, 90 of them were in decline,
yep,
which means that 90% of those quote unquote trust marks have lost trust. And that means that consumers, citizens, people have lost trust in the institutions, the brands, and the services that have had previously defined what, you know, were the anchors of the things that they can trust in modern society. So it could be a millennial, but it's not just a millennial. I think it's it's back to that democratization of information.
Your point about the democratization of information, this reminds me of the advertisements for cigarettes back in the sort of 60s and 70s that I vaguely remember, you know, walking down the local high street, seeing a sign for Craven A will not affect your throat. I still remember that. And as information grows and people realize what they're actually doing, then they realize that the brand is a lie, that it is a machine that's designed to, you know, to manipulate people. And is it that with social media and this access to information, consumers are now realizing that they have been sold a lie systemically, in terms of price, in terms of goodness, in terms of, you know, is it really organic? So I think what Brandless is doing is really just throwing all that away, saying that there needs to be this hard reset.
Yes.
The way that, you know, brands interact with consumers.
Absolutely. Because what we're saying is we are a brand. Absolutely. Like, we chose that word because it was really much more about live more, brand less, because we are redefining what it means to be a brand, one that's based on truth, transparency, authenticity, and that's in partnership and in relationship with the people that we serve. And that has not been the case. And to your point about that ad on the high street, you know, today that's a Google search, right? Number one. And number two, that governments have not been transparent. Look at all the exposés.
Yep.
People have not been transparent. Just open the newspaper and read the headlines today. Institutions have not been transparent. And so look at all the corporate whistleblowers. Cultures have not been transparent. And all of this is getting torn down. Is it the millennials tearing it down? I don't think it's necessarily the millennials are tearing down. They just have the ability to play the long game. They're saying, okay, we can burn it down to the ashes because we're playing the long game, and we can rebuild it. We can rebuild it in a way that is based on our values. We want to be buying things from companies that we believe in. We want to be buying from companies that walk their walk. We want to be buying from companies that represent our values. And we don't want to buy into a false narrative because we actually have our own story to tell. So what Brandless, when we say fill in the white space, what we mean by that is, far be it for us to tell you how coffee should make you feel in the morning. Why don't you tell us? Far be it for us to tell you, like, we'll give you some recipes because that's fun. But if you've got some hacks or you have a better way to think about that, please do. I mean, we just launched our clean beauty line, but like one of our favorite beauty posts was from the beauty blogger who took our organic coconut oil and mixed it with our organic brown sugar and made an exfoliant, a lip exfoliant. And that's not even, we didn't even think to put that in the beauty line. And then we dropped it in there afterwards. We're like, that's a great idea. Like, thank you. So it's like we're in co-creation with the people that are using our products. We heard them and we agree that if you use the just what matters philosophy in everything that you do, in the beauty category, that philosophy was about being rid of the 400 ingredients you kind of don't want in your beauty products. And that means phthalates and sulfates and parabens. It also means cruelty-free. You want your beauty products to be created in the same way you want to live the values of your life. Now, that's not the case for olive oil. Olive oil, you actually want an organic olive oil. And so that's a different filter because that's a different category. And so we're not creating brand promise that comes from an agency high on the hilltops. We're actually doing it in co-creation with the people that we're building this stuff for.
Which is, and it's about the consumer not being a consumer with a capital C. It's about the consumer being a person who has
yes.
the right to take your products, and you're giving them the channel to say, I really enjoyed your product. I've used it in this way. So there's that, you know, it's a horrible expression, but there's that feedback loop. So you're building a community, there's conversation, which is completely different to the way that normal brands push information and push aspiration to us.
Exactly. And so, you know, the feedback loop, it's not a terrible word because I think what's been enabled by these platforms, by the iOS operating systems, by the fact that your mobile phone is not a phone, that's probably the least you'll ever do with it. It's actually a cursor in the real world. So if you imagine it as a cursor in the real world, then like, wait, I'm here. I'm present and accounted for by everybody's systems. So therefore, I have a voice. And oh, by the way, not only does my voice matter, but my people, the crowd, the stars, the votes, they're with me. So like, can you imagine going to a hotel today or booking one that you hadn't read the review on?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be like, why would you do that? Are you really going to read the brochure? I don't even know if that's like a word. And so the reviews, the crowd is, firstly, you have a voice and then the crowd is there to help you.
And I think in one of your TEDx lectures, you talk about the four-star life.
Yes.
Which is not, you know, as you say, living in the four seasons in Delhi, for example, it's precisely
using that as a filter and using that as an information filter to actually say those who've gone here before us, what did they think? What can I learn from them? And so it's like a brand is not only what a friend tells a friend, but a friend is listening to an awesome stranger because they trust the crowd, because that wisdom of the crowd is actually going to help them filter the way they want to read and review things. That's not for everybody, but that's for a lot of people. And so it's the combination of all that. It's like the crowd against the madmen. Who's going to win that?
Yeah, and the issue is the challenge or the naysayers would say, this is a publicity stunt. This is it's a gimmick, as it were. Forgive me. But I think it's just so much deeper and more, you know, sort of fundamental than that. So how are the big brands reacting to this? How are they competing? How are they trying to move you to one side so that they can keep on business as usual?
You know, I the only thing I can say to that is, I don't know, you'll have to ask them. Because, you know, we're an early stage startup, you know, that's lacking sleep and trying to move as fast as we can. And we've only been live to the world for 14 weeks. So I don't know, other than the fact that we just every day, we don't focus on what they're saying. We're listening to the people in our community. And we're trying to do everything we can to go faster, to do more, and to reach more people. And not only is it about our products, but it is about the environment and the communities that we all live in. Because, you know, in the last recent weeks, the horrific natural disasters of, you know, hurricanes and storms and displacements. And as I sit here and talk to you, 40 miles north of my seat, my neighbors in my community is burning.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we need to figure out, like, how do we walk that walk too? What can we do to support Texas, to support Florida, to support, you know, our neighbors in the North Bay? And the answer is that we're a small startup, but we want to help educate our community on what resources are available. We want to connect them with organizations that we're in partnership with, like Feeding America, who, you know, is a nonprofit organization that's been tooled from the CEO to the food banks to help, you know, tackle the hunger crisis in this country, both every day across this nation, as well as rallying for disaster relief. And we want to support them more. We want to, you know, disseminate field guides to giving and walking and doing and helping. We want to be like, we put people first, and that means the employees, that means the team, that means the people in our active community that are buying our products, and more importantly, the people we have yet to meet. Like, they're all people that we want to be thinking about, how can we be on this walk with you? Because it's not always fun, and we want to be there, and we're humans, we're real people dealing with the same issues that all other real people are dealing with. And we want to be transparent and active and in conversation.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about was how Brandless is a more of a movement than simply a way of selling goods.
That is true.
And what seems to be clear is that the people that are part of the Brandless community are much more than just consumers, because the traditional brand doesn't have that same relationship with the consumer. They don't sell directly to the consumer. They sell to Walmart, to Walgreens, to CVS. And CVS has that relationship. But what you're doing by connecting directly to the consumer, you're able to engage them in things outside of buying ketchup and toilet paper.
Absolutely. And not only that, it's like they are like what we are here for. So, you know, we launched our clean beauty this week, but the truth is that the video that I posted on my social was, you know, what does beauty mean to you? Like, and having people fill it in. And then, you know, posting the blank space and telling people they can download the PDF and put it on their own channel and then just write their own copy. Like, we're not going to write the copy. It's not up to us to tell you what beauty should feel like. Beauty is a feeling, and it's a different feeling for everybody. And far as I'm concerned, you're already beautiful. And so it's not, I just want to provide you with incredibly awesome products that are fair and clean and wonderful, and then you go off and tell me how you want to use them, or tell each other, or tell your friends, or, but that's not for us to say. Who are we to decide what makes something beautiful? That's wrong.
But it's that connection. I mean, you, and again, in one of your other TEDx lectures, you talk about hiking one morning in Marin County, where you had your Lulum on top, and it got a little bit chilly, so you sort of unfolded the sleeves, and there was this message saying, cold hands, warm heart. And it was that, the fact that there's that additional connection, the ability to take someone further than just being that consumer transaction, that I think you refer to it as a receptional experience. Is that what you're building into everyday items? Like, you know, are you giving just that purchase of something simple, the ability to deliver joy as well as, you know, its functional capabilities?
100%. We want to be an enabler of that. But in order to be a great community, communities are not producers. Communities are not programmers. Communities are not marketers. Communities are places that facilitate the connection, the intention, and the support around shared passions, shared affiliations, and shared experiences. And so in order to facilitate that, that's an art form unto itself. It doesn't mean you just show up. The lights have to be on, someone has to be home, and you have to be listening, and you have to be in conversation. Because if you want to actually be in relationship, you talked about the fact that brands don't have direct relationships. You're right. But if you want to be in one and you really want to put people first, then you have to act like somebody that people want to be in a relationship with, which means you have to be vulnerable. You have to be transparent. You have to be honest. You have to be caring. You have to be thoughtful. You have to be empathic. Otherwise, why would somebody want to be in a relationship with you? And when you make a mistake, you have to be the first to call it out. And you have to say you're sorry. Because people are companies are made up of people. And we're going to make lots of mistakes. The most important thing that we do is we own it and we talk about it. And we're going to have lots of victories. And we want to celebrate those too. More importantly, we want to celebrate yours.
And I think that's right. Because what you're doing, even though it's actually counterintuitive, because even though the brand is brandless, what you're doing is you're potentially exposing yourself to everything, because you're saying we will be vulnerable, transparent, and everything we do, you know, we're doing for the benefit of our collective community. That's a real challenge, because you're not hiding behind a brand. You're raw. You're open to everything. It's not like you're like the honest brand, for example, where we say we're honest, but you know we can hide behind some of this. Or you are truly vulnerable by saying that you're involving the community this way. So it's
being vulnerable make it more real?
That's what I mean. It's a massive challenge. It almost feels cowardly now to try and hide behind a brand and a jolly green giant that apparently doesn't exist. I'll have to check that out. I'm quite moved.
I promise you, but you tell me what you find, because if he does, I would love to meet him.
Apparently, I think he lives with Santa Claus.
Oh my God, that's very funny.
I hope no kids are listening. I don't want to be responsible for bursting that bubble. But so it is, it must be incredibly exciting, because you've got distribution points of presence, East Coast, West Coast, you're in 42 states. You have 200 products, which is now growing to 300. You're about to launch it's like a beauty range. What are you launching next week?
So first of all, we are in 48 states.
Oh, there you are.
And so we're shipping to all of the contiguous United States. So 48 states within the continental U.S. And we launched our beauty line yesterday.
Wonderful.
And that was just beyond exciting, because when you think about the things you reach for every day, you know, shampoos, conditioner, shave gel, body wash, body lotion, facial lotion, those are all the things you reach for. And so we know that given our Just What Matters commitment to everything that we do, we wanted to launch them in a completely clean way, rid of the ingredients you don't want in those products. And so we rolled out our beauty collection. And then from there, we also rolled out over the last, 2 weeks, our nutritional and wellness collection. And then over the last 3 weeks, we launched our tree-free toilet paper and facial tissues. And we launched our organic cotton balls and cotton rounds. So when you think broadly across the things that, you know, you reach for every day, that you use in your life, and you apply that now at Brandless, and if you're a woman and you are wanting to use organic feminine hygiene, we launched that too.
Yeah.
So now it's like a holistic collection across beauty, personal care, and then more broadly wellness, where you have nutritionals, you have facial lotion, you have body wash, you have shampoo, you have conditioner, you have lip balm, but then you also have tissues and these other pieces. And everything that I just described, absolutely everything, is $3. And in some cases, it's 2 for $3. So in the case of lip balm or facial tissue, you'll get 2 of those for $3.
And I can tell you the overriding feeling that I get is one of relief when I hear, because I'm just imagining now going to Costco to buy a razor, you know, and there are, I can't tell you how many different types of razors packaged in different ways. You know, I want to buy some shaving cream, so I've got to buy, 40 gallons of shaving cream. And I don't want 40 gallons. I want one small, you know what I mean? And that's without even trying to figure out what it's made of. And is it going to dissolve my face if I put too much of it on? So I think it's just that freedom from having to decide what am I going to buy?
And the commitment and the storage. And it's that, you know what? It's paralyzing. So the paradox of choice in our overconsumption society, with the proliferation of products and SKUs and sizes and flavors and all of that, you don't need yards of salad dressing. You don't need racks and aisles of shave cream. And part of what we've done is we borrowed a page out of the editorial book, is that we edited it down, curated it to just what matters. And that doesn't mean that it's just plain and simple. Just what matters can also be flavor discovery, trend discovery. So for example, we may, in salad dressing, we know that, you know, balsamic, poppy, and Italian, all organic, are the three most popular. So that's just what matters. You don't need 48 feet of it. But the sesame ginger dressing is phenomenal. And it's a new flavor that's becoming much more mainstream that we're exposing you to. So when it comes to ketchup, it's one organic ketchup. But when it comes to snacks, there's such newness and interesting discovery. And we're able to provide that because we know that the elastic consumption and the idea of sharing it with others is something that you might want to do, and you might not want to do that with your mouthwash. Although I love our mouthwash, it has essential peppermint oil in it, and so I actually have bought many bottles to give to friends. But that's just me.
And but what sort of feedback are you getting? Because you've been operating for an incredibly short space of time, and you've achieved amazing things in 14 weeks. But is the feedback that, how do people feel when they unpack their extra virgin olive oil and realize that this is the best olive oil they've tasted? That is not, that it's $3 when they're expecting it, half expecting it to be a product that's slightly lower quality.
Yes, but they're amazed. I think the organic, they're amazed. I would say if I had to summarize it in two words, it would be thank you.
Which comes back to this idea of creating joy that, yes. And is there going to be a backlash? Is there going to be the brandless army who will be rebelling against Procter and Gamble, tearing down the ramparts of industry?
Well, I mean, that's funny because my co-founder, Ido Leffler, you know, when we talk about our sort of creation story, and you know, I remember when he said to me, if people knew what things cost versus what they pay for them, they'd be riding in the streets. And I said, you know, it's funny, but it's not so much about riding in the streets, because in this particular category, people don't really know what they even pay for things, because they tend to buy baskets, not items.
Exactly.
And so that's why the Price is Right is still probably on the air, because people don't really know what a can or a bottle or a bag costs. They know what they spend on grocery maybe, but they might not know an item. But rather than thinking about Occupy CPG, like Occupy Wall Street or Occupy anything else, what if we were to take the absolute inverse to that problem and provide a solution, provide a platform, provide a place that unlocked joy, didn't incite anger? They can incite anger all they want if they want to, but like that's not, we don't want to be a part of that. They can reject institutions, they can reject brands, they can reject government, they can reject whatever the conventions of old society, but that's a generational change. What I think is more fun and way more where we want to play is to invent stuff that they'll love, stuff that represents their values, stuff they want to share, stuff that makes them smile, and be the kind of people that we get to be in relationship with the awesome people we have yet to meet, because that's just who we are as people. And we don't ultimately care how they voted or how they, how much money they have in their bank account or their sexual orientation or all this other like filtered bullshit that is trying to define how we need to see people. I don't want to filter people by my newsfeed. I want to filter people by the filter of like, yes, and like, just come in. Like the door is open. Join us, join this. So when you say it's a movement, well, it's a movement because we're saying, join us. Like we're having fun. Come play.
And this, I cannot think of any other parallel. I think that there are other brands that have tried to manipulate words to create the image that they are doing something different, when in fact, it's really, you know, just, you know, the emperor's new clothes, as it were. But this is an entirely different approach. And I think it is the shape of things to come. And funnily enough, there are all sorts of parallels with what's happening with things like the blockchain and how institutions are being broken down and decentralized. So this whole concept that these brand icons, what they actually really represented was, you know, was lies, obfuscation, you know, big pharma, big business, people lining other people's pockets. And that's, I think that's what's being broken down as well.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about blockchain, I mean, isn't blockchain the democratization of currency, the democratization of like, of exchanges, right? Like the secure platform that is crowdsourced and crowd held as an underlying platform to enable the future of currency and value exchange, like true currency, right? So it's all about that, because the crowd ultimately will do the right thing. And that wisdom, if you follow it and trust it, people will ultimately do the right thing. Now, will there be bad actors? Always, sadly. But when the systems get reimagined to democratize everything, ultimately, the people will reign supreme. And you can build a company for profit and for purpose. They don't have to be mutually exclusive, and one is not at the expense of the other.
And I think particularly because of the transparency that you bring to what you're doing, where you are, you know, there is nothing hidden, where you are vulnerable. So that makes it real, as opposed to making it just another sort of set of so-called brand values. And the fact that we're seeing this happening in parallels in other industries, it's, you know, the next few years will just be, I think, astonishing in terms of the pace of change, but also the breadth and the number of industries that will be disrupted, changed. If I was running one of the big brands, I would be, you know, scratching around, really worried about, you know, how I'm going to grab a consumer share in the next 5 years.
Well, luckily you're not doing that.
That's right, yes. Clearly, I chose this path on purpose, knowing full well that in
the future. Chose this path.
But I think now would be a great time, Tina, if I was to submit you to my rapid fire questionnaire.
I should have read your rapid fire questionnaire before I let you submit me to it, but because you did send it, but I was naive and distracted by the horrors of the North Bay. So bear with me while I bear with you.
That's right. Or I could just ask them, and we could cut out the bad bits in the edits.
Okay. Any way you want.
By the way, I'm not going to edit that bit. But anyway, here they are. They're I'm just going to hit you with them. The first question is, what is your favorite word?
Awesome.
And what is your least favorite word?
Cat.
Cat. You know what? That's, I agree with you entirely. And number three, what are you most excited about right now?
The human spirit.
Fantastic. And what turns you off right now?
Negativity.
And what sound or noise do you love?
I love the sound of a baby sleeping.
Yes. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Horns beeping and with road rage drivers.
The anger behind
the anger behind the horn.
And my next question is, what is your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Do you know, I wish, in the same way that you'd registered socialmedia.com ahead of everyone else, I wish I'd invented the word fuck and somehow trademarked it.
I always, you know, at some point I would like to understand the psychology of why that word just works.
I think it's the primordial molecule.
Okay. I think
everything is made of that. But anyway, my next question, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Like that I might do it? I'd say stand-up comedy.
Brilliant. And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Government agency.
Oh dear, yeah. You do feel sorry for them. They're up against it. And my last question is, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say? when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Your mom's been waiting for you.
Oh, fantastic. That's brilliant. See, now I can't begin to thank you. How do people get hold of you? How do they find out more about what you're doing? How do they get hold of Brandless? How do they become part of what is going to be the biggest change agent that I think we're going to see in our lifetimes?
Well, firstly, they can follow me at Tina Sharkey on Twitter or at Tina Sharkey on Instagram. They can follow Brandless at Brandless on Twitter or at Brandless Life on Facebook or at Brandless Life on Instagram. They can like us and follow us. They can go to brandless.com and use the promotion code HELLO and have $1 shipping on their first order. And they can join us. We think we're onto something, and we would love it if they would come play along.
I think you are. And it's been such a pleasure having you on, Tina. Thank you so much. And I really look forward to following your progress. And I can tell you,
I have to meet you. When are you in San Francisco? You have to come to the lab. We should do a Facebook Live with you. That would be too much fun. We'll get Julia and a bunch of folks.
That'd be great. I can tell you my next order, you know, Amazon delete. I can tell you that. So.